thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to another episode of Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am honored to be your host. Hope you had a wonderful Easter weekend. I'm excited to be back from the break. American Gods, an original series from Starz based on the acclaimed 2001 novel from Neil Gaiman of the same name, is a show about gods, deities, idols. The series portrays America as a deeply religious nation, but not in the way that one might think, certainly not in the traditional sense. The show creates a dichotomy between old gods and new gods. The gods of world religions and ancient mythology have largely been forgotten, erased from the public consciousness. These gods have been greatly weakened by a lack of belief, adoration, and worship, barely holding on to their identities. But religious practice is alive and well. Faith and worship are as vibrant as ever. It just has taken on a new form. It's evolved. The old gods have been replaced with new gods. These emboldened new deities were born and bred in the USA. They feed off the unconscious belief and esteem of contemporary Americans, who worship at the feet of deities like technology, media, and conspiracy theories. There's a lot of truth in Neil Gaiman's allegorical story. There is also a lot of truth in Gaiman's depiction of American culture, which I think is reflective of Western society as a whole. There's also a lot of truth in Neil's understanding of the persistent religious instincts of our day. But if I can deviate from the script for a minute, while remaining faithful to the general premise of the book, I would say that there are three American gods that reign supreme today, that far surpass and triumph over all other deities. These gods have always been, are, and forever will be worshipped at a higher level and greater intensity than all the rest. Their devotees are mesmerized, bewitched by their powers, seduced by their promises, held captive, made a slave to their desires. The worship these deities receive is often unconscious. Their devotees don't fully realize how devoted they actually are, how much time and energy they have committed, how much of their lives they have sacrificed, how much tribute and praise they have offered up, how much of themselves they've given up. These three gods are called by many names: mammon, money, wealth, riches, fame, popularity, celebrity, influence, pleasure, gratification, euphoria, indulgence. These are the gods of our age: the god of money, the god of fame, and the god of pleasure. And we've all worshiped them in one fashion or another, at one time or another, to one degree or another. We take off our shoes in their presence. We remove our hats when people around us speak highly of them. We run after them with all earnestness and all vigor, with everything we have. The only way to dispel the spell that they've placed on us, to disenchant their inherent enchantment, is to begin to see them as they really are. For these three deities are not actually gods at all. Though they masquerade as gods, though they appear worthy of our worship and devotion, worthy of our time, energy, and self-giving, they are actually demons and devils, wolves hiding in sheep's clothing. Though they seem worthy of our praise and honor, though they seem so new and novel, they're actually as old as sin, as ancient as greed, pride, and lust themselves. Where do you worship? At the bank? In front of the mirror? On a cell phone? What do you bow down to? Have you worshipped any of these gods before? I think I may have seen you at a couple services, but I was too busy singing hymns and writing checks. Do you still worship any of these gods? Or have you begun to see them as they are? Have you exposed them for what they are? Idols made out of gold. 3 golden calves, freshly polished, glimmering and shining, crafted by human hands, human constructs, statues built on crowded streets. Legendary, mythic, unreal, fake, as empty and hollow as they make us feel. But all I feel is a lie. Mendacity. Have you come to know these gods as false gods? Have you experienced their hollowness? Have you felt their emptiness? Is your soul left wanting as your heart is still beating? Are you as disillusioned and disenchanted as I? Are you happy and fulfilled? Do you know the way to true happiness? Do you even care? Over the last few episodes, I've attempted to demolish the false gods and idols of our age. I've been in the process of a kind of deconstruction, but not the kind of deconstruction that has become popular in recent times. Not a deconstruction of classical religion, but a deconstruction of modern religion, which I suppose is both ancient and new at the same time. Ironically, the gods that I've been deconstructing are the very gods that many wealthy and popular and excessively indulgent deconstructionists worship today. Gods of avarice, gods of celebrity, gods of covetous and lust. Over the last few episodes, I've been trying to demonstrate that these gods are not gods at all. That they are no substitute. That they can't replace the god of old. The god of the philosophers. The god of the religions. The god of all gods. This God also goes by many names. The Absolute, the Infinite, the Being of all being, the Alpha and Omega, the First and the Last, the Beginning and the End, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Spirit of all spirits, the Spirit of Love, Love itself, Love incarnated, Love in time, Love on a cross, suffering love, Love resurrected, Love ascended, glorified love, eternal love, forevermore. This is the ground and goal of our existence. The only thing that can fill the human soul. The very love that made the human soul. So that the soul might be loved by love itself. Into eternity itself. I've talked a lot about the American filmmaker Terrence Malick on this podcast. He's definitely one of my major influences. If you like this podcast, you'll probably like many of his films. But he has made some not-so-good movies quite recently as well. Movies like To the Wonder, Knight of Cups, and Song to Song. Even though these films were subpar, I still respect what Malick was trying to accomplish. The same thread runs through all three of these films. In fact, all of these movies are about the same exact thing. Vanity. Through these films, Malick is trying to tell the world, to shout it from the rooftops, as loud and frantically as he possibly can, that money, influence, and instant gratification can't, doesn't, won't bring true happiness. He's trying to warn people, with every last and dying breath, of the futility of all such pursuits. That the pursuit of wealth, status, and the fleeting pleasures of this world is ultimately a pointless one, a cul-de-sac, a dead end, an endless loop of vanity. But most must experience the vanity of such a pursuit in order to know it to be true. Many must live it before they can believe it. I know I have had to. I know that in some sense, I still am. How about you? If what I'm saying is true, if money, influence, and pleasure are ultimately dead ends and false summits, if they can't actually lead us to our desired destination, to the goal of true and lasting happiness, then what will? What are the kinds of things that might realistically function as fruitful and effective means to the end of happiness? Well, if you know me, and you've been listening to this podcast over the last couple years, I imagine that you can easily guess two of the three means that I have listed in front of me. Considering my philosophical background, it won't shock you to hear that ethics, morality, and virtue represent one of my answers. Along with the classical philosophers, I believe that the moral life is the good life, that the virtuous life is the joyful life. Likewise, considering my theological background, I know it won't surprise you to know that God serves as one of my answers as well. Along with the classical theologians, I believe that God is the source and goal of all joy, the creator and consummator of every blessing, the origin and culmination of all good things, the beginning and end of all happiness. Because I've discussed these two means to happiness many times before, and because I'll continue to discuss them in the future, I won't expound on them now. But before I close this episode out, I do want to briefly mention and provide a very quick sketch of the third item on my list, which overlaps with the other two items: balanced living or holistic well-being. I believe that, by and large, the more balanced and well-rounded a person's life is, the happier a person will be. For argument's sake, let's subjectively and arbitrarily divide human experience into several different dimensions: the intellectual dimension, the moral dimension, the spiritual dimension, the physical dimension, the social dimension, the artistic dimension, and the leisure dimension. I think that human beings are at their best when they're able to participate in, strike a balance between, and nurture all of these different dimensions within the overall structure and composition of their lives. I believe that you are at your best when you are exercising your mind, building character and growing in virtue, feeding your soul, taking care of your body, nurturing your relationships, utilizing your giftings, abilities, and talents, practicing your hobbies, and setting aside time for rest and relaxation. People flourish. People thrive. People are happy when their lives are balanced and well-rounded. This is what I mean by holistic well-being. Now, this is a lot easier said than done. The problem that confronts us is the problem of time. How do we find the time to maintain this kind of balance in our lives? How do we minister to every major aspect of our being and every major dimension of our experience on a consistent basis? Yeah, I mean, it's tough. But maybe instead of trying to strike the perfect balance on a daily basis, we should attempt to strike an imperfect balance on a weekly or even monthly basis. Start small and work your way up. All I know is this: the more unbalanced we are, the more narrow and limited and small our lives are, the more unhappy we will become. You were made with so many different passions, desires, loves, interests, giftings, traits, attributes, and characteristics. You are multidimensional and multifaceted. If you are not ministering to these different aspects of your being, if you're not nurturing these different dimensions of your life, you will feel it. You'll notice an absence, something lacking, something missing in your life. A person who is consumed by her job, dominated by her work, and defined by her occupation serves as a good example of this. Unless her job perfectly corresponds to her passions and is inherently life-giving, such a person will probably not be very happy, regardless of how much money she's making, or how much influence she's wielding and status she's garnering, or how much pleasure she gets from the power and authority she possesses. This is because she lacks holistic well-being. She lacks a life outside of work, which is why work-life balance is so important. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks. This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinkersensitive.